I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello everyone, welcome to Red Men Radio, the Liverpool podcast. From me, Paul Machin,
and that man there, Chris Pager.
Ooh, was that your come to bed voice?
I don't get to use it often, so I don't know.
Come to bed, girls! Kick-off question this week comes from Andy Lochry on Twitter. Which current Liverpool player would last the longest in the Royal Rumble? We've got quite a few wrestling-themed questions on the Q&A this week, but we'll get to this one first. I think there's an obvious shout, because it's the obvious shout for every question ever at the moment, and that's Virgil van Dijk.
Joel Matip.
Go on, why?
Because I think, you know, first off, you're right, Virgil van Dijk is the obvious shout, but I think Matip will be put in first as the big man and he'll have the longest, whereas I think Virgil, you kind of just want him to win. And I think, you know, there's different ways of doing it. Sometimes they put the big man in at the beginning, sometimes they put them in right at the end just to screw everyone up and he waltzes to victory. I feel like Matip would be there for like, I don't know, is it 32 people? How many people go into the Royal Rumble? 30, right? So he's there, number one, lasts till Virgil comes in, and then Virgil just throws him over the top.
He's everyone's going, whoa, the big man's in here, and he survives, and then Virgil comes in and shows him what a big man actually looks like, and just one touch, clothesline. The Matip stuff is, I think Matip is like, whenever they bring out another big fella, and he's not very good, and he just gets battered by everyone, and he gets double teamed and he gets thrown over. Whereas Van Dijk's the kind who, he's the Undertaker, isn't he? Basically, he's just the kind of one who come in and, I mean, like, I don't think Van Dijk would win it because inevitably the big fellas often get ganged up on. It's someone else. It tends to be like a bit smaller, but a top guy. So it's like a. It's a Bobby Firmino, because I think he's got like, he's just got all the fucking tricks in the book, and he's defo got that, you know, when they go over the top rope and they hang on and they pull themselves back up again. I bet Firmino's
flip
got that,
themselves back into the ring.
I guarantee, yeah, he's got something in his house where he can practice that.
Okay.
Just like, you know, just random, like, I bet it's not even a full ring. I bet he's got just a set of one side of a ring set up in one room of his house. Wouldn't surprise me at all. You know, and there's like a load
I'd take the bet though.
Yeah, there's probably like a load of bowler hats nailed to a wall, and you know, and just, you know, like melted records hanging off couches and stuff,
loads
like
of masks,
kabuki masks everywhere,
majoras
but backwards and suspended from the ceiling, because he's just fucking weird, isn't he? So you know what I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at all. So let us know which current Liverpool player you think would last longest in the Royal Rumble. News, not too much in brief this week because we haven't got two games to talk about, so we're gonna dive into the news a little bit more. Joe Gomez, we heard last week, Chris, suffered an injury setback.
I'll be honest, Paul, I can't really keep up with all the injury setbacks that we've had at the moment. Yeah. I'm like coming in every day like, who's fit? Who's injured again?
Yeah.
How long are they out for? It just seems to be every single day you're coming into something new at the moment.
And it's speculation largely as well. Now, we're recording this before Klopp's pre-Leicester press conference, so there will hopefully be a little bit more clarity off the back of that. But equally, there might not, because, you know, Jürgen, his famous line is, why should I let you know more about my team selections, because no one else seems to have to do this. The Gomez one though is that's a big one for me. I think we were all hoping that he was going to be back in training now-ish, so that we're starting to gear up to get him ready for Bayern Munich, because obviously we know Van Dijk's not going to be available for that. I can't imagine that. Sorry, bear with me a second.
It's the wires, don't worry about it, it's fine, it's been like this for 2 weeks.
Is there a random wire just not
because the
in?
Wire that's in now doesn't work and we need to cut this off and pull it out, and we've just not done it yet.
Brilliant. Is that,
getting sorted today.
Of course it is, Tom. It's getting sorted. Brilliant.
Looks good, though.
Yeah, I mean, that. So we are facing up to a world now where, you know, we're going to have to put a lot of reliance on Matip, and you know, we don't even know where Lovren's at the moment. You presume Lovren will be back.
Rumours are that Lovren could start if Van Dijk's a miss. I think, you know, the game against Leicester, you know, I personally play Van Dijk at 50% fitness. You know, I think he's that important to us at the moment. And I can't imagine the Klopp's going to give us too much in the press conference. But the Gomez one, you're right, it's a big blow. And I wonder if we'd have known how long he was going to be out for, would we actually have got rid of Nathaniel Clyne? And, you know, and I think it's easy to look back with hindsight and say that.
Yeah.
But I actually do think in this instance, you maybe don't.
Yeah.
Because he's so important, not only at right back, but also at centre half. I mean, you know, more so at centre half. I think, you know, he was in such good form. He will be out for probably nearly 3 months, you'd think, at the time of coming back into the side. How long is it going to take to get back up to match fitness? I think if he was out for 4 to 6 weeks, maybe not too much.
Yeah.
But, you know, 3 months is a long time.
Yeah, it's one of them. At the minute, we are all in that mindset. Well, we're all largely positive, and I'll talk a bit more about it when we get into the Leicester stuff, of course. Like, but these are the things where you don't want this to be a pivotal part of the season. You know, we've come through January. We've got, at least we haven't had to play all the extra games. Let's continue to buy into that narrative that we're happy that Liverpool, you know, didn't have more FA Cup and League Cup action for the sake of the point. It would have been nice to come out of this little break a bit more ready. Whereas as it turns out, and hopefully we'll know a bit more. But you know, a day before that we return to action, we're looking at potentially no Van Dijk, potentially no Lovren, potentially, well, definitely no Gomez, almost certainly no Trent Alexander-Arnold, and there was even talk that Fabinho had a little thing as well.
Wijnaldum as well. I think this is the thing, though. I think, you know, it is important to recognise where we are in our season. I think it's important to recognise, I think, that fatigue plays a massive part in injuries, you know, and that's not to say that, you know, tired players, people who aren't tired don't get injured, they do.
Yeah.
That can happen. But the more fatigued you are, the more likely you are to pick up an illness or an injury of some description. So it's bad now. With the extra games, it could have been a lot worse. And that's not to say that it definitely would have been, by the way.
Yeah.
But we could have been teetering on the edge of a complete crisis
all
across the board. So I think that, fortunately for us, we are probably in a better position because of the lack of games, but we could be in a really, really bad position. And listen, we've got players that can do a job right now. You know, I think the likes of Fabinho will be important over the next few games, probably more as a defender than we'd imagined. And we'll be looking to get players back. Will that have a knock on in a couple of months' time? Maybe. But right now, Klopp's taking it a game at a time. I think you've kind of got to trust him on that he's going to put the team out that he thinks can get 3 points in the next game.
Yeah, definitely. We saw a really hot transfer rumour drop on Sunday, that Abdulkadir Omar from Trabzonspor had agreed a deal to move to Liverpool at the end of the season.
Shook hands on it, hadn't we?
Shook hands, presumably, according to dodgy Turkish translation. Rubbished by the club, James Pearce stepped up to the plate in solid James Pearce fashion. Nailed it. It wasn't even like a Babe Ruth style points to the fences and swings. More like he just got on top of it and pummeled it to death before it even had a chance to grow legs. I've done a couple of news shows on this, and this has got all the hallmarks of an agent just trying to drum up more interest, because he's being linked to like Newcastle and Crystal Palace.
Oh, you don't want that as an agent.
No.
You don't want that at all.
No.
Liverpool's big clicks, big news, isn't it? I think, you know, I always find that whenever I look into those transfer rumours, you type in the player's name and you type Liverpool.
Then type Arsenal.
And then type Arsenal. And then type Man United. Yeah. And you tend to find that they're all linked in some way, shape or form.
Completely on that. And by all accounts, Liverpool have scouted them. So, I mean, you're his agent. You can say with, you know, with absolute certainty. Liverpool have had a look. Liverpool are interested.
But that, does that mean you can say you've shook hands on
the
deal?
Well, I know. This is where it starts again. And I mean, it was funny because the account that this came from was like a verified Twitter account and blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, we all start to stretch into the world of how many of us actually speak Turkish. I don't. I use Google Translate, which leads you to some hilarious
translations. Wonderful translations.
It's one of the highlights of my every transfer window for me. But yeah, looks a decent player. He scored a few goals this season. But he, you do tend to look at it, and I always, we've got a decent record, or Klopp's got a decent record of pulling players from obscurity and making things out of them. So it might not be for nothing ultimately. But I think Liverpool are more in a world now where the players that Liverpool are going to sign are known entities. I think probably.
You know, at the younger level, maybe not. I think if they've if they're going straight into,
you're talking the fair, 15, 16, I think you're right. You can, because no one knows,
and maybe 19s as well, and it'd probably even go up to 21s at
you
some
think,
point.
Like, are we going to be in for 19, 20 year olds that Man United, Arsenal, Chelsea, etc. are not in for?
No, unknown to fans.
Oh right,
I think that's a difference, isn't it? You know what I mean? I think it comes down to this, Paul. Liverpool will scout players. You think they sign every one of them? No,
they clearly don't.
Yeah. You know, there's going to be hundreds of players that Liverpool have scouted over the last 5 years that Liverpool haven't signed. Mm. That's what you do. You scout them for a reason. You scout them to work out whether you think they're good enough for your football club.
And to justify your wage if you're a scout.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just to get away from the house.
Why not? You know, you don't want to watch Coronation Street every night that it's on. Sometimes it's good to just get out of the house.
Go into Fleetwood. Are you really going to find a player from Fleetwood? You never know.
But there are those diamonds in the rough, they still exist in football, and they always will do, and people are always searching for that, because that's where you get the most value, isn't it? I think, you know, first of all, you might not have to compete on wages and transfer fees. Liverpool will be looking at, across the board, at players, known entities, non-known entities. It's just the way that the world is.
That's it. My feeling on this is, if Liverpool are going to be linked to like anyone aged between 18 and 21, then one of the other big Chelsea or Man City will also be in for them, because that's just the nature of that. I mean, every pretty much with the exception of the lads we've signed from the Championship, almost all of our signings have also been linked with one of our major.
Maybe
our
I
major
mean I don't remember Robertson
rivals.
Getting linked with anybody, and
well,
he's older
apart
than
the
that.
Apart from the players we signed from the Championship, so like.
He was Premier League at the time, wasn't he?
But you know what I mean? Like, so this is a guy who... The Robbos, the Genies,
but
although Genies...
I don't know, I'm not sure Shaqiri was linked anywhere else, I think.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying.
So I think, you know, that kind of proves the point. If they're doing it with established Premier League players, they'll be doing it with unders as well.
Yeah. Rafa Honigstein, I mean, I got this via Anfield HQ, so treat it as you will. I didn't see this directly, but apparently he said that... I was asked about the Timo Werner stuff. He said, like, Klopp's a big fan and he would suit Liverpool's style of play, but thinks Liverpool are much more interested in signing a versatile centre-back with the ability to deputise in wide areas, much like Joe Gomez. This is one of those things where our squad's fine for how it is right now. I was having a conversation with my uncle at the weekend about this. This is the beauty of, I think, where Liverpool are, is we've got the best squad we've probably had in the Premier League era. Maybe apart from like that golden generation that was ruined during the Spice Boys era with, you know, Fowler, McManaman, etc. And yet I could still look at Liverpool's squad, and if I was being utterly ruthless and I knew we had money to spend, I could. There's probably four or five players easy that I feel we could upgrade on in the summer, and I don't fear for the defence at the moment. But if you could go and get someone as good as Joe Gomez, another Joe Gomez will.
You just would,
wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks very much, Joe Matip. Thanks very much, Dejan Lovren, etc., for your service. But I think we can get better.
Yeah, I think we can get better. And we can get younger as well. I think that's the other thing, isn't it? You know, Matip and Lovren are peak ages for centre halves right now. But you've got to make sure that the next ones are coming through as well. And Joe Gomez would allow you to do that. I think you've got a right back probably in Trent Alexander-Arnold, who's going to be there for the next maybe let's say 5 years. Mm-hmm. You're looking to sign another right back in. Well, it's not going to be. Well, I'll tell you what. Nathaniel Clyne is a perfect example. It's not going to be a 27-year-old who's going to sit behind a 20-year-old for 5 years, is it? You're going to have to get that next that next guy up almost, or get a guy with a load of confidence and a load of ability who thinks that he can break into that. You know, I think Dejan Lovren, again, you know, the timing of his career, he wants to be challenging for trophies in the first team, and I think right now you could question whether he is a first teamer. Joel Matip will be exactly the same. Yeah. How long are they going to be willing to sit behind Joe Gomez for? And the versatility side of things, Klopp's wanted that across the board in his attacking players since he moved into the club. It only now is starting to filter into the defensive side of stuff, because now he's got the defence that he wants. Yeah. And I think now he's starting to build that side of the squad up. I think, you know, the times when you see a left back and solely a left back on the bench are probably gone for Jurgen Klopp. He wants players you can fill in at multiple positions, because you only get 7 subs.
Yeah.
You know, you've got 11 places to fill on the field if an injury was to occur.
Yeah.
So there's not enough there, is there? So it makes perfect sense that you're going to want somebody who can switch, or somebody in your first team who can move aside.
Absolutely.
To bring a centre-half in.
It's a daft example, but like, in fact, you play Ultimate Team or you play my club on PES, don't put a keeper on the bench, because I want as many options as, but you can deal with your keeper being a bit out of form in that instance. You want that extra, you want to be able to do the things that you do, the positive things on the pitch to the best of your ability. So you're dead right on that, and that's why you can see like Keanu Hoover, you can see why he likes him, because, well, there's a lad who can play all across the back three in terms of his confidence, and we'll see as he develops, but he looks like he's got the ability on the ball that if you needed to drop him in a DM, you could do, because he's not going to panic in possession, which is going to compromise everything again that you do in terms of your style or whatever. So yeah, you're dead right. It's just mobility, isn't it? Game intelligence, ability on the ball, mobility. If you've got those, you can, and you're of a decent height, it's a lot of it. Now it becomes a bigger ask the more you add those things, of course, but that's what we want. We want athletes, intelligent athletes all over the pitch.
And also, like, we used to talk about this all the time, about how our centre-backs were no good in space, and I think Joel Matip and Dejan Lovren were the two that we used to talk about a lot. And, you know, going back even further, Martin Skrtel, for example, think about his times at right-back that we've seen him just absolutely rinsed by the likes of Henry, who did that to a lot of players, by the way, right-backs or centre-backs, it didn't seem to matter, by the way. But also, you know, we know our full-backs bomb on, and our centre-backs have to cover that space sometimes. And so having a guy that is comfortable tackling in that area of the field and knows his defensive responsibilities when he is dragged wide, it makes him a better centre-back for being able to play that right-back,
yeah,
and a better fit for our system.
Yeah, and we're just in that position now where we've got them, we'll have the money to spend, we'll buy what needs to be bought. There's no more, oh, well, we'll have to make do and amend in certain things, because we're now in a situation where we don't need to go out and buy 4 £50 million players to make us competitive. We're competitive. We just need to keep that turning over. You've got a combination of lads coming up from the academy, and then you've got you buy a couple of bits and pieces that genuine top quality players to bolster what you do. And look, we might find that centre back thing does come from within. It might be just two seasons too soon for Hoover as an example, but we'll talk about him in a bit. You might find Camacho might just become an absolute revelation at right back, and then all of a sudden you don't really need Joe Gomez to do that, so it changes your thinking in other areas and so on. So no, it is interesting, but that word versatile, I think you're right, I think will be key to everything we do. Same with the forward thing, we're going to be linked with centre forwards all summer, guaranteed. How long? We're on the countdown to the first Karim Benzema link, by the way. Everyone, just strap yourselves in. And to the first Robert Lewandowski link, guaranteed. Klopp won't buy a centre forward like that.
No,
he won't be. Timo Werner, reasonable link to him is because exactly. He can do the thing. The reason we were linked with Nabil Fekir, we all had him pegged as being like the attacking mid, but he could have played left wing, right wing,
and
as a false nine if we needed him to as well. Absolutely. Simon Mignolet's been interviewed. I think he was interviewed in the Liverpool Echo. Apologies for not crediting that probably. But I talked a little bit about, he was talking about Alisson. I covered this on the news show yesterday, which I'll come to in a sec. But he's also ruling out a January move. And he said, definitely nothing will happen this month, and we'll see what happens in the summer. Hopefully it will be a story for after we've won the Premier League and the Champions League. I've said before, I don't want to be sat on the bench. I'll be 31 in March. Of course I want to play, but in certain circumstances, you have to accept the situation you're in. Something I can't control myself. All I can control is my training and being there for the team. I think you said the other week,
all the credit in the world to Simon Mignolet, really. You know, he could have been an absolute bell end this season. And there probably is something to the fact that, you know, he's a younger man, but he's probably learning off Alisson because he's a better goalkeeper than him. He's there, he's in and around it. He's comfortable, he's not going to move out, and there's a good chance he, you know, he's going to be involved, whether in an active sense or not, in a, you know, a Premier League title challenge and possibly a good run in the Champions League again. I like that. I like all of that coming off from him because, again, he doesn't need to say all this
stuff. I think the interesting thing for me is what you've just said there about probably learning from Alisson. And, you know, I get that Simon Mignolet wants to play football, and I think that's good. That's a trait that you want in a number two. You know, career number twos, not something I'd ever think, yeah, what a guy. You know what I mean? You clearly want to play football and stuff. But I think the ambition that Mignolet's got will probably have informed this decision. And what I mean by that is Simon Mignolet might want to be a number one, but he doesn't want to be a number one at Sunderland again. He could go and be a number one at Sunderland again, or a team, equivalent team nowadays, of them bottom half of the Premier League. Looking
he's
to
much
go
too that, good for Sunderland
He is, but also, where does he want to go with his career? Does he want to go for a mid-table club, or does he want to try and stay at a top club? And I think if he wants to try and stay at a top club, learning what Alisson's doing at Liverpool is probably going to help him, because he's never going to get 20% better.
Yeah.
But he might get 5% better, and he might be able to do a job at a top four side.
Well, all of a sudden, we talk about this all the time, about players who left Man United and they go to, like Phil Neville going to Everton, and we never rated Phil Neville as a footballer, but he was a good footballer for Everton because he carried a wealth of experience with him when he moved to that side. Simon Mignolet doesn't suit our style of play. I think that's been Everton for all to see. But if for him, in terms of his next career move, in terms of getting your CV sorted, if you can hang on, you hang on at Liverpool for this season, and if Liverpool do win a league title, he gets to say he was there. He, you know, he's experienced it, and yes, he hasn't been the active guy who's responsible for achieving it per se. God, I hope not, because I don't think my heart could take that. But he gets to. It's just a something, isn't it? It's a something in your dressing room. You go to another club, it adds value to you because you've been in and amongst that. It's something you can say, I was there, I know how this is done, etc. You know, when we go back, we look at our squad and we list things that players have won. We're happy to throw in Daniel Sturridge's regularly title winner. Yeah, you know, what did he really do in that regard? So yeah, Mignolet, I think it's smart in his regard. As you say, he's training, he's never going to get better trained than he's getting at Liverpool right now. And again, in terms of the challenge and the experience of all that stuff around it, one last time, you've stuck it out at Liverpool all this time. You've been lambasted at times throughout all these things. There's probably something that it would put a nice full stop on his Liverpool career, I think, if we could get to it and we could lift some major silverware.
And also, look, he's probably want to sell a few books in a few years' time, and keeping this story under wraps for now is probably going to help him.
How
10
I
years
helped
time.
Alisson become a Premier League winner. It's interesting as well, because he talked about Alisson. And again, it talks about him accepting his role as a number two more, and how it's easier to accept when you've got someone like Alisson there. Basically, he said he's definitely top five.
Sly Digger Karius, by the way.
No, exactly. Definitely top five and possibly best in the world. And again, it's just, this is all I like all this. The point is, there's nothing to be gained from him rocking the boat. You know, to be slightly cynical on it, but
if you were to pick a number off the top of your head, Paul, of where Simon Mignolet, seventh best goalkeeper in the world. Wow. The question is, where would Simon Mignolet be in those those lists? Because
of the best goalkeepers in the world.
He's probably top 30 or 40,
There's loads of logics, and people can pull apart my logic on this to their heart's content in comments or on Twitter.
Seventh.
Yes. Let's say, for the sake of argument, that you've got the five best clubs. You've got four big European leagues.
Yeah,
you've
three in Spain.
You're averaging five teams a league for the sake of it across all those leagues. So you're talking 20 teams. So and he's second choice goalkeeper for one of those teams. So he's probably top 20. Now that doesn't factor in. You've got is he better than Kasper Schmeichel?
Question.
Probably not. So you're right. Mignolet probably is in the top. Debate it, split hairs.
He's in the top 50.
He's definitely 100%. 100% in
probably
the top 50
40.
I would suggest top 30 is probably right.
Okay, so for a guy like that who let's be honest, if I was top 30 in the world at anything, that would be a really big achievement. I'm probably top 30 at whinging. Well, I'm really good at whinging.
You're top 30 in tennis. You could come home with a, you know, you could win something, mate. You could win Wimbledon if you were in the top 30 in tennis, like, you know.
Right. Not so many, I mean, can't win
Djokovic,
Wimbledon.
Federer and Nadal, but it should
retire at some point, and Murray still has his issues. But the thing is, I think as somebody who's, let's be honest, has climbed to the top of his profession, because there's hundreds of thousands of goalkeepers in the world and he's top 30, let's say, to be able to sit there and think, I'm not as good as him, and actually say that in an interview, a guy who's, what, 4 or 5 years younger than him, that must take a little bit of something as well, yeah. You know, to be a bit of a realist on things, and then to go, I can get better because of him, and try and force your way into a side. I think they're good traits to have in a person, never mind a football player.
I was joking on the news show yesterday about how you're like, no, I'm going to stay here and fight my life, I am the best man for the job, and then Alisson walks in and you just go, yeah, no, I'm not. No. You just walk in and you're like, okay, yeah. Yeah, fair enough. Number two, can I have a contract extension? Am I all right to just, is it fine if I just stay here? But that, yeah, I mean, would it be a bit of a rude awakening, you know? Whereas, like you say, Karius comes in, and I think I spent Mignolet probably looked at it and gone, there's not too much difference between me. Yeah, he's a bit better at this, but I'm a bit better at that. Alisson is better at everything.
Yeah,
absolutely everything, and I bet he's better at things that Mignolet's, and he's never tried that Mignolet's tried loads at as well. Like, so, like, Mignolet might be able to. Alisson may never have touched the Rubik's cube, and Mignolet might be able to do one. But I bet if you just tossed one to Alisson, he'd have it done before it even finished.
I reckon if Alisson and Mignolet were doing this podcast, and Mignolet knocked his cup over, Alisson would catch it from over this side of the table, and Mignolet doesn't have a chance. He's just that much better at pretty much everything.
I think Mignolet would go to knock it, and Alisson's hand would be there before he even knocked it off.
What
to
are you
be
doing?
Perfectly honest. Well, you're going to knock that off there, mate. Yeah. Careful.
Got to see things. Yeah. Alisson sees things.
Absolutely, he does. Mane actually has done an interview and talked about the title this time, Chris. Not one of those complete bullshit, fake made ones by terrible, in inverted commas, news outlet. Nothing mega here, to be honest, but he did say, you know, we believe we're heading in the right direction, but there are some very tough rivals. City were unbelievable last season and very strong again. But talking about the title challenge, talk about title possibilities, he said, but why not? That's how you do that. That's how you do all that stuff for me. That for me is perfect. For this time, for January. You know, I must admit, like I said, I did like the idea of Mane having a massive set of bollocks to some extent, and saying, like, yeah, we will be champions, we will win the league. Obviously not true. But just a little lesson for every football player ever.
End it with a question.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, maybe. Of course, it's a possibility. Yeah. I'd like it if we did. Wouldn't that be nice?
Now, see, this was with the official the club
this
website.
No, this
it?
Was with World Soccer magazine.
Right. Okay. I read it on LiverpoolFC.com or whatever their website. Didn't realise it was there, and I was thinking to myself then, had that been, let's say, World Soccer magazine, I might have just left the "but why not" off. You know what I mean? It's like, because you know what? Without that one little kicker at the end, it's a very different sentence.
Yeah, definitely.
Fair play to World Soccer magazine, by the way. The old WSM.
Yeah, top quality. There's something about it. I think it's wonderful management from Mane's management, in that World Soccer magazine is one of those. It's such like it's a proper like elite. You know your footy. You know World Soccer magazine. It's a proper like the when you're dead cool as a teenager and your mates are all reading Match. And you go and get World Soccer magazine because you're fucking you're brilliant and you understand footy. But you know, it also showcases him as
never heard of it, by the way.
Did you not?
No,
really. Well, there you go.
I wasn't going to admit it after all that you'd said about him, but then I'm fucking
more of a shoot man. Yeah,
so people will probably tell by my face that I've just glazed over while you were talking. I've never heard of World Soccer magazine. Now,
It says a lot, because you basically position him as one of the biggest names in world football by putting him in that magazine as well. That's the kind of thing. In the 90s, they were all over Italian football. If you wanted to know about Italian football and AC and all that, World Soccer magazine was the magazine to read about all that stuff.
But he talked about the front three form as well, which I quite liked. And he said about how people were criticising and saying that they weren't quite firing on all cylinders and they weren't that. And he said, look, we're really competitive. We think we're going to get better. And this plays into what I said a bit on the build-up show. I've just got this real sneaky feeling that we are ready to just go up a gear in what we do. Like, we're really ready to start flexing our muscles for longer spells of games, really, really prepared to start to unleash what we do. If we do, Chris, fuck me. What an end of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we've scored a few goals recently, and I think that makes a difference. You know, coming back against Crystal Palace and putting four in, and obviously the four against Arsenal earlier on in December and stuff. Liverpool have got gears to move through.
Yeah.
I'm probably not quite as confident as you as that they will do that, to be honest, because I think they are placing a level of importance on defensive stability that will maybe hinder that attacking threat. I think if you were to go 2-0 up in games, then we'll see that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we are still going to feel out the opposition. We're going to take a long time to make sure that we make the right decisions at the right time. And so we're going to see a lot of games, I think, where 45 minutes in, it might be 0-0 at half-time. If we get a break early in games, you know, get an early goal and maybe get a second, I think then you'll see that. I'm just not sure we're going to see that all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
But I can see why you'd say that. And I can see you can see that Firmino's clicking in that 10 and yeah. They have a much better understanding. And well, Salah's being amazing goals, at the hasn't nine.
That's the difference, is that these lads are all... There's just an upturn. I mean, Salah's just been consistently good, but we consistently get better in second half of seasons. So there's something in that. Whether we go mad as bollocks 7-0 week in, week out, but I would expect us to be just more for, because we've been creating the chances.
Hmm.
You know, we've been doing, it's not like people, I think it's a bit of a misnomer, isn't it, to say like we've been, you know, it's like we've become a defensive side. All of a sudden we're just better at the defensive stuff. It's not like, it was like the Klopp talking about the Salah things and how he's just been better in his all right, he feels he's been better in his all round game, doing all the right things. It's just that thing of, There's something that clicks in the team when they just go up a gear normally after Christmas. I don't know what it is, and whether it's being unleashed or whether it's just players just finding the form, finding the feet. We've talked this a lot about adapting to a formation. We're getting better week in week playing in 4-2-3-1. It stands to reason that there'll just come a point where
people can't deal with us. Yeah,
exactly, absolutely. Deadline day, Thursday. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that.
It's been quiet.
Exactly that.
Very quiet.
Yeah. I love the fact that, I mean, obviously certain outlets have tried to stir up a few bits and pieces, but there's been nothing concrete at all. There's been transfers happening, like Alvaro Morata's just moved from an 18-month loan to Atletico Madrid with like a £50 million fee attached if they want to buy him at the end.
Never going to happen.
No. It's been quite refreshing to not be embroiled in all this stuff. Don't get me wrong, I don't think we necessarily desperately needed anyone, but it would have been just a nice lift, isn't it, when a new player comes in. It's something to get excited about and what have you. But it's been nice to know largely that there's nothing happening.
I think we all as fans all understand how Jurgen Klopp works much better now than we used to. I think 2 years ago, I think Jurgen came out and said, this is my squad for the season type of a thing. And obviously, you know, a year ago, he ended up signing Virgil van Dijk in the January transfer window. And so you think, oh, does he really mean that? I think it's a little bit of a different case. I think now
we'd have had them in the summer if we.
Yeah, exactly. I think the other thing is as well, you know, I think Liverpool, and I think it's good for the squad that Klopp places his trust in those players for an entire year. Like, you know, I know you're the guys that I believe in. We mm-hmm. don't need anybody else to achieve our goals this season.
Yeah.
I think you get an extra couple of percent out of that. And I think the other thing is, as fans, we now know that, you know, you can buy a Naby Keita for 50-odd million, but it's not necessarily going to work straight away.
No, God, absolutely.
You know, Fabinho, we know, took him a couple of months. We always cite Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain and Andy Robertson. If Liverpool were to buy a player now anyway, I don't think it's for now.
Mm.
I think it's for next season, in which case, is it worth you upsetting the apple cart? Let's say you bring Timo Werner in. Do you get better performances out of the lads on the pitch right now, or do they start worrying and overthinking? I mean, there's all that to consider at the same time, isn't
there? There is the psychological lift of having someone coming in, and maybe it keeps people honest. You can look at it from both perspectives, can't you? But there's all that thing. You're right. You've got to get people up to speed in what you're doing.
now's not the time of the season.
End of January, let's say 3 to 4 months, end of the season.
It's, you know what, it's a bit like you ever play a computer game, and there's always like it ramps up, so you might get 3/4 of the way through a game. You can't then drop someone who's new into it at that stage of the game, because the difficulty, the complexity, all the things you've done, people are never gonna get to grips with it. Klopp's not running people through the basics in February.
No,
he's not going, right, here's the fundamentals anymore. The fundamentals are done. It's fine tuning is what we're doing now. So you'd have to get someone you made the interesting point about the Coutinho thing. Coutinho is one of the rare players who you probably could just about do that, because at least he'd be integrated. He's already integrated into the squad, as it were. But yeah, there's just no time now. We've had that. Okay, yeah, we've got another break to come before Bayern, but you're not getting a lad up to the level that you need. Because as you say, we've had Keita here since the summer, and he's not even up to the level. We're only just now, really, now seeing Fabinho being like, he's got to be in the team every week. We're certain of that because he's so good. Shaqiri obviously started pretty well pretty early on, but you know,
it takes time. Yeah. It takes time, and I think that's the refreshing thing. It's not that Liverpool are or aren't interested in signing players. It's that the fan base doesn't care.
Mm.
You know, you don't see people whinge, wow, we're not signing him. Like last year, it was me. I was there, oh, I fucking can't believe we've not replaced Phil Coutinho and all this type of stuff. Now there's just this level of trust that you go, sounds okay. If that's what Liverpool are doing, I'm behind it. Yeah. I support them. The top of the frigging table.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are, obviously Liverpool will stay top of the table regardless of results this week. But Leicester is next on the horizon. I'm just really excited for this, Chris. I'll be honest. I've enjoyed the little break. It's been nice to be able to have time and breathing space to do a few different things, just in a production perspective. This is, I mean, by all accounts, heavy snow is forecast for Merseyside on Wednesday, so it could be absolutely horrendous. But just in terms of getting back on it, because I'm starting to get the little bubbling thing in my stomach, the nerves. But it's not like not fear. It's just that nervous excitement, because we're right back on it again. And lest we forget, we've got to go back, get back into the business of being the best team in the
get
country.
Back into the business of being the business. Yeah. That's what we are at the moment, isn't it? And listen, I look at Leicester and I am nervous, and I'm nervous only because of, you know, Vardy. I'm nervous because I've seen Leicester hurt us over the years, you know, not the last couple of times we've played them, but there's still that fear that you get. There's the fear because of the injuries that we've got of what defence is going to turn up and how Jürgen going to play those lads, and is Fabinho going to be in centre mid, and all the things that we've already discussed. That makes me nervous, but it makes me no less excited. Mm. And I think sometimes I've gone into games as a fan with a fear, a genuine fear. Now I'm like, okay, yeah, but I'm actually intrigued as to what's going to happen and see how Klopp is going to overcome this hurdle, because he's overcome so many in his time at Liverpool manager already. Like, I talked about it a second ago, the Phil Coutinho thing. Bigger managers, that could have defined their entire career at a football club.
Yeah.
Letting someone like that go at the time that he let someone go. We've got better since.
Mm.
So every time Klopp's presented with a hurdle, he seems to overcome it and we come back stronger. So as much as I am nervous about what we're going to play, I'm equally confident that we're going to get the result that we need.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And in terms of the personnel, obviously we talked about a couple of players. We didn't talk too much about Rafa Camacho on the build-up show. Whether he'll play or not, I don't know. If there's an opportunity there for him, I'd like to see him get that opportunity, because there's a possibility there, and we saw it with Trent going back a few seasons. I don't expect him to come in and be ready-made long-term Liverpool solution at right back, but giving kids these opportunities in isolation, I don't like it. I hate it when we make that eight. You know, you're making eight changes and then you're looking at the player you're really excited to see doesn't excite, because ultimately he's playing in a team that's lost fluidity, and that was the big problem with that Wolves game. I'd be more than happy to see a lad of his talent coming in, because I just don't think he's absolutely fearless. And yes, there are potentials potential pitfalls to it. There always is when you put young lads into sides. I'm all in on the Klopp trusting. And him going, okay, no, this is your chance, this is your opportunity. Go out there and show me what you can do.
I'm not, to be honest with you, you know, and I've just give it large about how I trust Jürgen Klopp and stuff like that. My thoughts on this is I actually don't think Jürgen will do that. And I think that's because I'm not sure he does have the trust in Camacho as a right back. If he was to do it, yeah, sound okay. I'll support you like I support every player who puts on that red shirt. But I actually can't see it happening. And you mentioned that Wolves game there. And listen, we've spoken about this game at length. And I think you're right in what you're saying, by the way. I do think that he wasn't able to shine because of the team that he was playing a part of. But equally, there was some poor mental errors from Camacho that I just think whoever's playing inside of you there, those errors would have occurred regardless. And maybe you could say to me, actually, if Virgil's there, he listens to me and he does drop back a little bit more and stuff. And yeah, I agree, there's a fearlessness about his performances, but for me, he's not ready yet. Mm-hmm. And that's what it boils down to. And if Jürgen tells me he's ready and puts him into the starting 11 in the Premier League, then I'll pause for thought.
Well, let's work on that. Let's work on that assumption that he does.
That he does, then mm-hmm. you've got to back him, haven't you? Yeah. But I don't think he is, and I don't think Jürgen does either. But I don't really know what you want me to say.
If Jürgen plays him,
then Jürgen thinks he's ready, then I'll go, okay,
yeah,
let's have a look, clean slate, exactly. because my judgment on him is clouded by the Wolves game,
yeah.
Because I've not seen him in a Premier League game for Liverpool playing
yeah.
right back,
yeah.
And I've only got that one competitive game of football to judge him on that I've looked at with my own two eyes,
yeah.
Jürgen's got a much more well-rounded view of how good he is as a player.
Yeah.
Because of everything that goes on behind closed doors.
I suppose we had a lot of this from the Wolves game, didn't we? In terms of how we thought players performed. Like, I love Camacho's performance against Wolves. I thought he was class. But what I like about him, and this is what I'm kind of driving at, is that rather than worry, you know, he's a young kid, he's an attacking player, there's going to be obvious issues defensively. What he has in an attacking sense is something that I think suits Liverpool down to the ground in terms of what we're doing. And this is why, you know, obviously there's still throw Fabinho in there, and there was a shout from on the bill for Hoover. I think it's much too soon for him, of course, but I like the idea of where we're in a position now where we're throwing a lad in who, this is a game where predominantly we're going to be tasked with going to beating Leicester. In years gone by, you're chucking Martin Skirtle in at right back, or you're having to move Jamie Carragher to right back. We're chucking a lad who defends first. This is why it wouldn't shock me with the Camacho thing, is that, and it's why Milner's been given the choice to go and play at right back, of course, because he's a front foot guy. He's a guy who's comfortable in possession of the football. I am potentially looking at the positives of what Camacho brings. It could be a very exciting addition to what we do.
He could be, and I don't mean to have a go at Rafa Camacho here in any way, shape, or form, but he's sixth choice right back at this club at the moment for me. You've got Trent Alexander-Arnold, you've got Joe Gomez, you've got James Milner, you've probably got Fabinho there as well. All right, fifth, sorry. And then you've got Rafa Camacho, and I think that is where I see him at the moment.
Yeah.
I think, you know, James Milner was definitely ahead of him in the pecking order for that right back spot, as evidenced by him playing against Crystal Palace. I think the next guy up is probably Fabinho there, and then it's Rafa Camacho. But I agree with everything that you're saying. You know, Milner, why he was so good against Crystal Palace for the problems that he had with Zaha was that he beat Zaha three times at the other end and gets an assist.
Yeah.
You know, our right back got an assist in that game, their left winger got an assist, so you can totally understand what James Milner's doing there. And Fabinho, equally, like I said on the build-up show, he's great going forwards.
Yeah.
Absolutely superb. He loves those little one-twos, and I think he's a good attacking option for us as well.
Yeah.
So I just feel that they offer that little bit more defensive stability, yeah. And it's almost like if we were sixth and there was no chance of top four, I actually would probably say, let's get Camacho.
Oh, yeah.
Let's get Camacho in. But we're second season Kenny here when he's come back, and the job's on the line. And not only that, the friggin' title's on the line, which is more important.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it has to cloud your opinion and that. And if he doesn't and Camacho starts, then that tells me even more about him than anything else, because we are going for the title.
Yeah.
And that is a huge decision for a manager to make. So if Klopp then puts him in against the side that we've historically struggled against over the last 5-6 years, then I'll go, cannot wait, because he thinks he's ready, and I will back that 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, it's that thing. It's like the Nathaniel Clyne argument. On the balance of it, again, this boils down to Clyne wanted to leave ultimately, so we chose to let him leave. But in terms of that thing of,
we know what Klein brings and we know what Klein doesn't bring to your side. And as I say, I'm excited for what I saw in the Wolves game. It was the stuff in the opposition half that I liked the most about it, because look, it's the stuff that gets your ass off your seat, isn't it? Ultimately, yeah. So yeah, I be really interested to see if Klopp does that and what we go with ultimately, because as you say, Fabinho's there, knowing that you've got. I mean, again, for Camacho, you've got Fabinho there. If you get the nod.
That's a big boost.
Yeah, absolutely. Big boost. Absolutely. A few questions to get through. But before we do, the lads, it was Ross and Ben this week. On the Around the League podcast on the RedmenTV.com, it's a little bit of a wider look at the things that happen outside of the world of Liverpool and, as the name suggests, around the league.
Do you welcome or entertain the idea of the FA Cup having the extra prize of added points in the league? So if you win the FA Cup, you get 5 extra points in your respective league.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
That's a wild suggestion.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because if both Liverpool and Man City, would Jurgen Klopp's approach to the Wolves game have changed if there were 5 points on offer in the Premier League?
I think it'd have to be higher than 5, because you think the amount of rounds that you've got to go through in the teams.
In today's,
I know. But climate. You think how many games you've got to go through first, yeah, when you could effectively do what we've done and go, yeah, fuck that.
Yeah.
I'm not playing an extra 6 games. Mm.
But so there's two ways of looking at it. You can look at it as
15 points, and we can have a conversation.
15 points, that's a lot. That 15 point wins a league. You could be fourth.
But
you could be fourth and win the FA Cup, and then you win the league. Like that's basically how that works.
But then again, you've gone through an extra 5-6 games to go and do that, where you can just jib it off and go, actually, I've got my players fit, and win the games that you wouldn't have won anyway because you've done that.
Yeah, get that and a whole host of other amazing content on the redmentv.com. The Newsroom podcast last week, Chris did with Chris Bascom, which is fantastic. You can get a little snippet of that in the Match Build-Up Show, which I highly recommend. It's available on YouTube and in podcast form for absolutely free off the website as well. So get involved with that. We had Andy Grant. We had one of the maddest. Probably the maddest build-up shows we've had. Obviously, people don't know Andy's story. He was in the Royal Marines and was blown up in Afghanistan, and he tells us a bit about his story and what he did from there. Totally different to everything we've done, but yeah, highly, highly recommended. If you've
the
not
stuff
been
that
the
he's gone through, and I'm on Twitter last night moaning about lamps in my house being turned on and the rooms getting darker. You know what I mean? And this, you know, it puts your life into perspective at times. And you'd think I wouldn't put the tweet out, but it did bother me, so I did.
So you did, because that's what Twitter's for. It's for binge bagging about things, like, you know what I mean? Absolutely.
And also not telling my wife that I did that.
For passive aggressive marital issues, like, definitely. Copite 305 at Copite Chronicles with a K. If you
sound like a cereal.
Copeye Crunch. Yeah. If you had a spare ticket for the final game of the season in which we would lift the Premier League trophy, would you sell that spare ticket to a friend for face value or sell it to a tourist for massive profit? Discuss. This has been a big deal. Lately, I've seen, you know, the tout price. We had a question about this. They're going for thousands already on tout websites. There's an obvious answer that I think is being led down this path, is that, you know, sell it for face value. And I'd like to stay, I probably would. But I think that what this does is this demonizes people who sell tickets on.
Yeah, you don't know the backstory. I think a lot of the time when it comes down to it, I mean, I know somebody who, when we were talking at the end of the 13-14 season, who said to me, that's my season ticket for the next 2 years, and I really struggle to pay for those season tickets. You know, it's a massive expense, and I think it's too easy to just judge a book by its cover at times, and I don't think you should always do that. You know, if the person says, "Yeah, I just want to rinse them," then you're just a prick.
Yeah,
but you're a prick regardless.
Yeah. We look. It's the world that we live in. You know, we end up having to pay over the odds for tickets all the time on stuff, because it is what it is. It is very hard to get to Liverpool games, and doubly so when Liverpool are doing really well. It's easier when Liverpool are shit, but when they're dead good, everyone wants to jump on the bandwagon. But I think there's, again, you're right, there's no one size fits all answer for this. If there's people, I think there will be people out there who, let's use it in a gig example. I know there's people who go on for every major gig, and they're on there with 10 computers, and they hoover up a load of tickets and they stick them out on there, and they do that for a pure business reason. And in that perspective, that makes me feel uncomfortable. I don't like that so much. However, as you say, there will be people there who will be faced with that decision of potentially missing seeing Liverpool win their first league title in 30 years with their own eyes, but it will give them the money to go to every to be able to go to every home game for the next two seasons, and they love, and that, who's the bigger fan? You know, if the difference between not being able to afford your season ticket anymore, and seeing that game, but you'd have to walk away from your season ticket, there's no right answer there.
Yeah. And just for the sake of it, I'd give it to my dad, by the way.
Yeah.
Is what I would do, because my dad doesn't get to go to games all the time and stuff, and you know, it would be a no-brainer. I probably wouldn't charge him.
You'd make him take you for a pint for it, like, yeah, definitely. But again, I get that. But that's a tough thing in any walk of life, because if someone walks up to you and says, you know that thing that you paid £40 for, I want to give you £2,000 for it. That's a very, very, very difficult thing. And the problem is, because football is such a tribal thing, and it's almost a pseudo religious thing, it gets taken away from the fact that sometimes that money is quite an important factor in people's lives. And you know, some people like money more than they like football, and they're the kind of people who don't want it on field, so sell your tickets and sell it to someone who wants it so much that they're prepared to pay £2,000. But again, sorry, another point on this notion that it's all going to tourists, I think that's a bit of like, it's a damning people with fake praise, or beating people with a stick and all that kind of thing. It's not all going to go to people who just want to, people who don't care about Liverpool. The vast majority of people who are going to pay over the odds are the people who are desperate to be at Anfield for that. Like, it is a once in a lifetime thing, but it might be people who've not gone for years.
It's probably just as likely to be members card holders who had 10 games this season and couldn't get 20.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. exactly that. Grace asks us, what's one Liverpool player you couldn't help but love, even though he was an awful player?
Alberto Moreno.
Okay.
You know, I think it's from doing this every week and Q&As and stuff. I just think, I've got this like little bit of love for him, and you know, not on the football field. You know, I don't think he's a great player. I don't think he's the worst player we've ever had either. No, to be no. fair, like, but I just think he's a lovable guy, and I think you can't help but he's an enthusiastic person. He comes up a lot in all these like, what type of player and all this. I just think I've harvested the love for Alberto Moreno that I never thought possible before doing these shows.
I think it's an interesting shout. For me, it's like an Igor Biscan. You know, ultimately he was fine. I gave him more support than he probably his ability level would have demanded. And you know, in the modern world, if you shit and you don't get support. Nah, I always liked Igor Biscan, and he had the best chant going. Igor, Igor. again, if you think about the good players we've got now who don't have songs or chants, Igor Biscan was one for me. Toro LFC, who would you pick as a footy tennis partner, current, past or present?
Okay, I narrowed it down to two, and they're very different, and there's probably one answer that, well, did win out. It was Luis Suarez and Jamie Carragher.
Okay.
Right. And I know what you're thinking. Why the bloody hell would you pick Jamie Carragher for a football tennis
thing? Oh, no, not at all. Carry on. I've got similar to my reason than I imagine.
I just wanted someone who's going to fight for everything. And he was the first player that came to mind. I was, you know what? If we're going for this footy table tennis world championship, I need someone who's going to give as much as I'm going to give.
Footy table tennis.
What are we doing?
Footy tennis.
Oh, regardless.
Okay.
I want somebody who's going to fight tooth and nail alongside me for everything. And Carragher came first to mind. And then I was like, and I want someone with loads of talent. And I was like, oh, Suarez is both.
Suarez does
right,
all
okay, Suarez is the right answer
exactly
on this one.
Exactly how I worded it. So I went through a number of players. It was like Mascherano. And I was like, Momo Sissoko pre-eye injury, because he's going to cover the whole court for me. He's going to be doing all my running. He can be, you know, whether he needs to be based on or whatever. He's the guy who's going to do all the running. And then I was like, yeah, Luis Suarez does all of that stuff, so let's just have Luis Suarez all day long. Brilliant. Yeah, we've got the Q&A coming up this week, which is an extension of this podcast, but a bit more daft and a bit more personality driven. Questions, a couple more wrestling questions, including if Redmen TV presents us with WWE characters, who would they be and why? Chris Watton, who also then followed up with Steers 100% Gilbert. talking about rule additions to the Premier League game, who would Chris and I like to tag team against in a tables, ladders and chairs match from the world of football, and a whole host of other things as well. So get over to the redmentv.com, sign up for that. The Q&A, we do it every single week. It's always a bit of a laugh, a bit more irreverent than the more serious stuff that we do, but the serious stuff is there as well, as you've seen and will have heard already. So yes, thank you very much for watching or for listening to this.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.